Hey everyone, it's the Metal Lord Colin Bossler, hoping you guys are having some wonderful holidays. The boys and I are taking a break, and while we're away, we're doing a favorite episodes replay of our podcasts. And for me, my favorite episode has to be the one where we interviewed celebrity chef Chris Santos. You'll hear on the episode that I get all fanboy and get all excited. I love the dude. I think he's awesome. And it's great to learn about his history, his record label, his transition into music, and so forth. So make sure you check that one out. We'll see you guys after the new year. And again, hope everybody has some wonderful and safe holidays. See ya.
Hey, it's Chef Chris Santos from Food Network's Chopped, which you might not know, I'm a huge metalhead too. I'm also middle-aged, and you are listening right now to Middle-Aged Metalheads.
Well, good evening. Welcome to another edition of Middle-Aged Metalheads. My name is Colin Bossler. I'm here with David Timoney, John Harden, and Michael Stamps calling in from Iowa. And I am really, really, really excited tonight to have Chef Chris Santos on the program with us. Welcome, Chef.
What's up?
Very honored for you to be here. And if you don't mind, let me give you a real quick background on how all of us got this put together. So on occasion, Chef, we bring a band onto our show, and Capra did our show about 2-3 months ago, and they were wonderful. Great, great folks. Had a great conversation with them. We were done, and David did a little bit of research, and he said, did you know that the label that they're on is owned by Chris Santos? And I said, what are we talking about? Obviously, you're very famous from all the cooking shows and everything on Food Network. And I said, no, I had no idea that he had branched off into metal. And so David was willing to reach out to you. You were on, again, blew my mind. Really excited to have you here. So if you don't mind, I'm going to start with just asking you, from food to metal, what's the connection? What's your history there? How did you start the idea of owning a label?
Yeah, so I've been a metalhead since I can remember. I mean, my entry into it was, I was probably about 6 or 7, and my older brother had like Kiss Alive 2.
Yes.
First Kiss reference.
I don't know. Middle aged metalheads here, but I'm 50. I think that's about middle age these days.
Yeah. I'm 50. And,
Yeah. So then, when I got to be a little bit older, I was about 12, I want to say, a girl from the neighborhood that I had a crush on, who was a metalhead, turned me on to Merciful Fate, and that changed everything. Mm-hmm. And then, I loved metal. And so I became a hardcore fan of all genres. I grew up, kind of in a great time, because in 85, 86, when I was 14, 15, Metallica and Slayer were coming out with, Ride the Lightning and Master of the Puppets, and all those great records by Slayer. But also Motley Crue was popping, and everybody else. And it was funny, because it's in our like high school and stuff, it was like, you could only thrash, or you could only the hair metal or whatever. And I loved it all, I started playing drums. I have a drum kit behind me that, I've been a mediocre player for now, going on 35 years. But I just loved it. And I started cooking as a means to an end. I remember being about 14 or so and entering high school, and noticing two things really quickly. The guys who were in the bands and the guys who had cars were the guys who got the girls. I went home and told my mother. I remember walking in one day and just kind of like my hands on my hips, being like, when I turn 16, I need a car and I need a drum set immediately. And she was like, well, then I bet you better get a job, man. So I got a job as a dishwasher, and, that there was an experience there that kind of led me to being a chef, which is that I got injured on the job. And but regardless, the chef quit, and he was replaced by another chef who took me under his wing and kind of exposed me a little bit to a different side of food. And I love to cook, but I love to eat. And so one of the reasons why I'm a chef is because just my love of food. And so without boring you with all that kind of stuff, went to culinary school, went to Europe for a while, and moved to New York, and just really fell in love with food. But metal's always been there. Metal's always been my soundtrack. It's always on in the kitchen. Like I said, I've played in a couple bands, nothing at all significant, but, just to have fun. But when I was a kid, and this is kind of a long-winded answer, but when I was a kid, before I was 16, I lived in, I grew up in Rhode Island. I don't know where you all are from, but I grew up in Rhode Island, which is a really tiny state. And I grew up in a small town, and I would take the bus every Saturday to Providence and buy all the records that had just come out on Friday, the day before. And at that time, you know, it was like when Flotsam and Jetsam's Doomsday for Deceiver came out, and but like all the real heavy stuff was coming out on Metal Blade or like Combat Records or whatever. But Metal Blade is a label that I knew about when I was 14, 15 years old. Mm-hmm. Brian Slagle started Metal Blade and is, you know, helped give Motley Crue their start. He's very much credited with discovering Metallica and giving them a big break, as well as Slayer. So he's become a legend in the metal world. And so Metal Blade Records is now 38 years old. They're the largest independent metal label in the world. And I knew who he was. And so I started a fanzine when I was about 16, because I knew about his fanzine, and, you know, interviewed Testament and Nuclear Assault and Voivod when I was like 16 years old. Cool. I still have my notebook and my cassette tapes from back in the day of those interviews. But then I, over the course of years, my restaurants started to become, you know, known for, like, if you're in a metal band and you're touring and you have the night off, you know, you go to a Chris Santos restaurant, he'll take care of you. And then that got even bigger in 2013. I started working for Jägermeister, and they gave me my own tour bus, and they put me on the Mayhem Festival. And so I was, you know, for a couple of weeks, I was on the Mayhem Festival with Machine Head and Amon Amarth and Rob Zombie. And basically I would cook barbecues at midnight for all the bands and their crew. I would do some stuff, some fan stuff, you know, some meet and greets with fans. Every now and then I'd do a special VIP dinner for like one of the bands, like Five Finger Death Punch or whatever. And I became, really through this whole process, I became good friends with a lot of, you know, I guess you would call them A-list rock stars. And I became friends with Johan from Amon Amarth, and I became friends with Kerry King from Slayer. And they're both very, very close friends with Brian Slagle. And Brian didn't know me at all. And they somehow, Brian's a big wine and food guy, so they were surprised that we didn't know each other. So Johan introduced me to Brian Slagle at a Slayer show at Madison Square Garden. And we like instantly became friends, and like best friends. And it was funny because I, you know who he was when I was a teenager, and I'm meeting him when I'm in my mid 40s. And so he is a big wine guy. And so a lot of times, you know, he'd come to my restaurant or whatever, and then we'd head back to my apartment in New York City, and he'd bring a bottle of wine, and we'd listen to metal, and I would play stuff for him. And he started signing bands that I was showing him. So he signed like Harm's Way. He signed this instrumental metal band called If These Trees Could Talk. Candiria did a reunion. I'm friends with those guys. I kind of put a dinner together, and they did that record. This band Mother Feather, that's more of like a rock band. But after like four or five bands, he said, you know, this is ridiculous. Like, we should do a label. You got great ears. And I was like, I don't have any time to do a label. Give me a break. And, he was persistent though. And said, we'll do the heavy lifting or whatever. And so finally I said, what? Yeah, why not? And so we launched that, and it was pretty cool because the Wall Street Journal broke the story that I was starting a record label. And I don't think the Wall Street Journal typically covers metal, but because I'm on Food Network, they found an interest in it. So that was pretty cool. And we launched in 2017. It's been a slow burn. We've got about 12 bands on the label now. Really some great bands that we've just recently signed that some I can talk about, some we haven't announced yet, but we're definitely picking up, what am I trying to say? We got great bands. Right. And, you know, the pandemic kind of slowed everything down a little bit, but it's okay. You know, it's allowing us to really sort of pick and choose. And I just really, the cool thing about Blacklight Media is that I really do get to choose the bands that I love. I mean, Metal Blade gets very much, if there's a band that I love, I take it to Brian. I take it to a couple of key people. If they are also digging it, then everybody at Metal Blade listens to it. And it is a group decision at the end of the day, but it starts with me saying, hey, I found this band. And I mean, that's been a hobby of mine anyways, before I had the label. Sorry, I can ramble forever. This might be the only question you get in.
Keep going.
I had the label, you know, a way I would unwind after work would be to come home and pour myself a whiskey and, you know, go down a rabbit hole of like, okay, well, I like Gojira, so I'm gonna go to there to YouTube or Apple Music or Spotify and go scroll down to like, you know, if you like this, you'll like this, and if you like that, you'll like this, and you know. 9 degrees removed from the first Gojira video, I'm listening to a band I've never heard of before. And so I kind of try to find bands that I love, that I obviously think have talent and can you know, can be successful. But also a big part of it is, you know, I organically want bands that I love to get as much, you know, or as many ears to listen to them as possible. So the best way to do that was to take him up on his offer and open up a start a label. So, yeah.
What that's amazing.
That's a wonderful story, though. That's fantastic.
It's really cool. It's really, as a matter of fact, we just Sunday night, excuse me, two nights ago, I had dinner with Brian and Carrie and in Vegas. And Brian took me to the Metal Blade Museum, which I'd never been to. And he took me, he's got a music house.
It's with the Metal Blade Museum. That's a thing.
That's a thing. So there's three things in Vegas. There's a Metal Blade store. There's a Metal Blade Museum. And then Brian has, it's not for public. He has a music house. It's exactly what it sounds like. He bought a house and it's filled with music memorabilia. He's got an Iron Maiden room. He's got a Slayer room. Like,
does he keep Kerry King in that Slayer room?
I'm not sure if he's got a full Slayer room. There's Slayer stuff everywhere.
Is this open to the public or
it's not? It's not. It's not. I was completely floored because I have a lot of memorabilia.
So it's not a museum. It's like, this is
the museum's open to the public.
Yeah. There's a museum that's open to the public. And then there's his own personal private collection, which is just his. I mean,
Mike is just looking for a reason to escape Iowa right now.
I was in Vegas. Had I known this, I would have stayed in Vegas a couple more days.
Still there.
Back on the plane.
There's a Metal Blade store at the Antique Mall of America, which is on the Strip or right off the Strip, I guess. And they have, what's cool about that is it's a lot of really old, hard to find stuff that you can. Yeah, so it's pretty cool.
Okay, and there's also a museum. Is this like in North Vegas?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. All right. That makes sense.
Sure. Vegas.
No, it's not all the way far the downtown. I think it's. I can't. I'm not sure.
is it near the Luxor or is it near the Stratosphere?
No, it's down past the museum. Is down past the Wynn. It's closer to the Wynn.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So it exists. So like everybody could like GPS this. So
You could put it, you can Google it. It's a viable thing. I do think he's got it closed right now because of, you know, pandemic and everything, but it was open and it will reopen.
That's super cool. I had no idea that existed. That's awesome. Yeah.
Well, of course it was launched right when the pandemic hit. So they had big plans for it. And then, you know,
Guys, if I can go, I wanted to ask Chef, we have talked to bands who come on here and it seems like every answer is different. Rarely do we get to talk to someone on the label side. You know, back in the day, it seemed that bands would tour in order to support a record. These days, they put out a record in order to be able to go out on tour. How do you see a label's part in a band's career in 2021?
I mean, really, it's getting the word out, you know, it's awareness. It's all about awareness now because, you know, the landscape has changed so much. It's so competitive. You know, there's so many great metal bands out today. You know, the music has changed a little bit, but there's really like, there's just so much out there. And so to get heard is very difficult. It's just really, really difficult. And so there's no magic potion, but what I think Metal Blade does really well and what, you know, and I'm, to be totally honest with you, I'm still learning, you know, I have a lot of responsibility in the restaurant world and the TV and with the TV show. And I've got other projects, that I do, which we can talk about or not. So that, you know, they really do a lot of the heavy lifting. So I'm still learning a lot of the stuff, but one of the things that they do really well is just, you know, they make really smart decisions regarding getting the word out. I think Metal Blade and their bands and their roster, and certainly Blacklight's roster, the bands make really amazing videos, which can really drive viewers, which then drive, you know, listeners, which, you know, is very important, you know, because that's how a lot of how we're getting paid these days is how many streams you get and whatnot. And, you know, in an age where music video is dead and it's not the 80s anymore, the quality of the videos that I think our bands are putting out and that we help them put out vis-a-vis helping them with, whether it's the story of the video or the budget, what, you know, is that we really get behind that and associate that, you know, so much of metal music is visual, right? You know what I mean? When you go to a nightclub in Vegas, of which I own several that do this, and you go to see a DJ, like if that DJ is just not moving, nothing's happening. But if that DJ is jumping up and down and going crazy, the whole room's going crazy. But with metal, it's almost like it's that's a prerequisite. It's like, it's so much theater, right? Metal is theater. And so I think Metal Blade is, and Blacklight, we know that. And so we really encourage our bands to be without, you know, being completely true to themselves, but let's push the envelope on, you know, creatively on how we can visually get you out there as well as just having people listen to you. I don't know if that's a good answer or not, but that's what I got.
It is. And like I said, I think you're going to get a different answer from every person you talk to in the music industry these days. So it's nice to get a label perspective on that. And nice to hear that you consider video still a vital part of a band's progression and an album's release.
John's a video producer, so he's
John used to be a video producer back when there were music video budgets. I produced pop music videos all throughout the 2000s. And I like, you know, some of the guys that would like intersect with your artist would be like Wayne Isham and Dean Carr, like, you know, guys that were entrenched in the metal scene back then.
I think the pandemic was very important. You know, there was, you know, how do you connect with your fans? And so obviously live streams were that, but I think music video was that as well. So many people were stuck at home and seeing bands, even friends of mine who support me and support the bands. I one of my best friends, we have a band on the label called Fight the Fight from Norway. They're great. Unfortunately, they released their first record with us like in March of 2020. My friend loved the record, and you know, it's heavy. It's like metalcore. It's heavy, and he's working out to it, and he's texting me all day. You know, this record is so good. This record is so good. And then the pandemic kind of hit, and then one day, out of the blue, like months later, I got a text, and he's like, "Yo, I'm checking out all these Fight the Fight videos. These guys are so cool. They've got such a great image. These videos are so great." And it's like, I was like, "You never saw the videos?" And he's just like, "No," you know. And that's kind of you. And that's kind of going back to the last question is, you know, posting on social media, using social media to say, "Hey, there's a really cool video. Go check it out." And you know, I think a lot of bands can, a lot of people can be interested in something on a listen, but when you can see it as well, I think you have a better chance of capturing that fan.
Yeah. So, like on that question there, Chris, when you talk about, like, you know, you start from like Gojira, and you're like, then you get down to like the seventh level sort of like layer where it's like, oh, you might also be interested in this. Do you feel like it's part of like the label's responsibility is to like sort of like jigger the algorithm to like get your band a little more play? Because we know, like, because there's been like these hearings and stuff about like what Google and Facebook do in terms of like how you get your stuff like front loaded. Do you guys have like a sort of marketing or media strategy for that? Like, get your stuff sort of like front listed, or?
I'm sure that there's something that I don't know that Metal Blade is doing to get the word out there. I think one of the things we still do is where both because Metal Blade is 38 years old, and because Blacklight is such a grassroots kind of label, I think one of the things we do is we still kick it old school in the sense that we use relationships. We have great relationships with people at Apple Music, for instance, or Sirius XM. You know, I'm really good friends with like Jose from Sirius, and well, I'm good friends with all of them, Shannon Guns, Katie. Do I call them up and say, "I've got this great band I just signed, and when the time comes, I'd love it if you support them and throw a single on the radio"? And of course, they're not going to do it if they don't like it, but typically they do. And, I think that's, you know, for me, the algorithm is still the old school networking and building and maintaining relationships and that kind of thing.
It's definitely not the days of like tape trading. Or stuff like that, but it's like the algorithm. It's like, because like you could like press like Capra, and then like the next band is like not somebody who's on the Blacklight Media. It's like, I don't know who this band is, and it somehow they've like sort of like jumped your spot in line in a way, because they got the algorithmic sort of advantage in a way.
How did you, by the way, speaking of Capra, how did you guys come to find them? How'd they come to
be David?
You know, it's, I was sitting, I never do this because I hate the radio and anything like radio, right? I make playlists and I pick my music, and I don't like randomness at all. But somehow I put a song on and had some checkbox selected that it just rolled into the next song, into the next song, into the next song. And somewhere along the way, a Capra tune popped on. It was their single Locust
Creature.
And I just stopped what I was doing. And I was like, I have to know who this is. And I ran over and I saw the name and I clicked, and they only had like two songs available on like a 5-song release or something. And I shot these guys all the link. I'm like, you got to hear this. This is amazing. I'm a sucker for a female singer in a metal band. And just the intensity of the vocals. And it was like this perfect blend of like that hardcore attitude, but very much like metal production and in your face. I was like, we got a contact. And I saw they had a SoundCloud. I'm like, if they have a SoundCloud, they'll probably answer an email. And no, and they came on and they're freaking charming and amazing people on top of being killer, killer musicians.
Yeah, they are. We're so excited for them. They're doing great. They're
Holy hell. They're coming to Philly in October to Ortlieb's, which is like this small little venue. I'm like, I'm going to be there.
Yeah, I'm actually, they're playing in, I'm in LA right now, but I'm going to be in Brooklyn, and I think they've asked me and Matt Bacon, who is kind of helps us a lot with the label, and he's my, we also have a podcast called Delirious Nomads, and Matt's my co-host.
Armored Saint reference.
Exactly. I have a factory sealed Delirious Nomads cassette right there, and I know all those guys. So when I was trying to come up with a name for the podcast, I was like, you know, I'm going to be mostly interviewing touring musicians. And they're nomadic by nature. And having been on a tour or two myself, I know what it's like to be delirious on tour. So it all made sense. And I called the guys. I was like, hey, do you mind if we... And they were like, they were very happy that I asked permission. But they were like, of course. But Capra has done really well. You know, we did vinyl pre-sale. We sold everything out. They're playing in Brooklyn, I guess, a night or two before Philly.
Yeah.
And they've asked me and my partner, Matt, to come up and do the male vocal on the song Mutt, which is...
Kind of cool.
I can't sing for fuck, so... Can I swear on this thing?
Yeah, of course you can. They do it all the time.
I can't sing at all, so that should be interesting.
Well, I'll tell you what. You hit the Brooklyn show and then roll down to Philly.
I might.
We'll take you out for some food. I'll take you some of the
stuff. What's the date? Do you know?
It's 10/22.
It's possible.
It's a Friday.
I'm going to be around New York that time.
Yeah, because it's I'll take you to some. I'll take you some of the best boxing trainers in the country. In Philly. which is going to drag me in. I'm going to jump the line here. I mean, I hate to say it. I'm not tugging on your balls here, but I mean, you're like a Renaissance man, right? I mean, you do music. You're a chef. You do boxing. You got businesses. You do TV. What? Now I find out you got a podcast. I don't know if I was supposed to know that already. I mean, aside from being, and I think this is very common for metal folks, you know, I have this saying that's, you know, death by ambition, dying or don't bother dying at all. What in the world else are you going to fill your time with? What are the things that have really got your passions going? And do you have enough time to do? Are you doing everything you want to do? And what else are you doing?
Pretty much. I mean, so the boxing thing, you know, I've always, I started late. And so that's the story there, but I love it. I'm a hardcore boxing fan. Like, I know more about boxing than I probably do about metal. And I know a lot about metal. I started watching fights on my grandfather's knee when I was a kid. And, I just love it. I know that the listeners can't see this at home, but behind me, I've got these lockers. Inside each of those lockers is about 100 boxing magazines. And in total, I've got probably about 3,000 that date back to the 1920s.
Wow.
I've got over 10,000 foot boxing matches on DVD. And I started boxing in the 90s at Gleason's Gym in Brooklyn, which is a pretty famous gym. And I did that for 15 years. And I sparred with some really, you know, well-known fighters. And I was very good. Quite frankly, I mean, I could handle myself in the ring with pros. But in 2010, I broke my ribs and a bone in my hand, like just a couple of weeks before I was opening a restaurant, and it was just bad timing. And I decided to take a year off to just recover. I was in the gym so much. I was getting cortisone shots in my rotator cuffs. And I was I was training like a fighter in the morning, every 5 days a week. And my body was just breaking down. And so I stopped in 2010. And I woke up in 2019, 55 pounds heavier, and And so I joined, I'm being trained by Freddie Roach at Wildcard Boxing Gym.
That's amazing.
Manny Pacquiao's trainer. I've actually been in and around Manny Pacquiao's camp for the last 6 weeks, which is really, which is fun. It's cool because I'm like the only non-pro fighter in the pro gym. So if you don't work hard, you're just in their way. You know what I mean? These guys are getting ready to fight, you know? And so it's worked. I've lost about 30 pounds. I got another 20 to go. I work hard there. I just started sparring again. I don't know how much I'm going to go and get into that. I am 50 after all, but I love it. So I love boxing. So I got to do something with that. I have a home fitness product that I co-founded, with a guy named Brian Padone called Quiet Punch. I'm going to shill here. It's called quietpunch.com. It's a really cool, very portable, lightweight, inexpensive, punching bag for people who don't have room or don't want a 300-pound thing. It's very cool for travelers. And you can also, it's got sensors in there so you can compete against other people. But yeah, so I love that. I love hot sauce. So I launched, I have a hot sauce and a barbecue sauce. I work with the Jägermeister. I've been working with the Jägermeister since 2013, doing brand ambassador stuff, which I started doing a lot of metal stuff with them. They've moved away from that a little bit. I think the only thing that's missing is I really want to get involved in the festival circuit. All the Danny Wimmer festivals, like, Aftershock and Louder Than Life. Him and I have been talking for years about me getting involved on some level, whether kind of like what I did when I did the Mayhem Festival, whether it's cooking for the bands, doing barbecues for the bands, whether it's doing something for the fans with some musicians, like meet and greets, get to meet somebody in a, a huge band. And also it's a barbecue by Chef Chris Santos kind of a thing. So I definitely want to do that at some point. But other than that, I'm going to start slowing down shortly. I think, I don't know. I've been saying that for a few years.
That's a lie.
So you say that after like a very exhaustive list of like ambitious things, they're just so impressive. So,
yeah, what? It keeps me out of trouble. The more work that I do, the less time I have to go, idle time. What does it really say? Idle time is the devil's playground or whatever.
Idle hands are the devil's workshop or something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
How often do you get to see your bands or any live shows, Chef? Are you going out and then seeing a lot of your bands and saying hi and checking in?
I'm just going to say yes, because the answer is no, because of the pandemic. But in a normal life setting, I go to as many shows as I possibly can. And I'm very fortunate at this point in my life where if a band is playing, if I can't see a band, I live in Los Angeles. I spend a lot of time in New York and Vegas, but if I can't, if a band's playing in LA and I just can't be there because I'm working or whatever, or I'm shooting Food Network in Knoxville, I'm lucky that I can hop a plane and go catch them somewhere else. And so I'm really blessed in that sense. And I'll do stuff like that. If I want to see a band bad enough, I'll travel to see them. I love live music. I love metal, especially kind of like what we were talking about earlier. It's the theatrics of it too, really is just so great. I'm excited to see. I'm excited to go back out and see bands. It's just a weird time right now. I'm hoping that these festivals don't get canceled. But if they do, I understand. It looks like we're all of a sudden going in the wrong direction again. But I'm looking forward to you can't socially distance in a pit. You know what I mean? And so I'm looking forward to when we don't have to socially distance.
It defeats the purpose.
Yeah. Right. And I love small shows. I love shows at little venues. Like in Brooklyn, if you're familiar, there's a venue called St. Vitus and another venue called Lucky 13. I mean, they're tiny. I love the magic that happens in a small club show environment. So it's not just the arena stuff. I love it all.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. What do you remember the last show you saw before everything locked down?
Yeah, Kiss. Kiss on at the Staples Center here was on March 5th of 2020. I'm actually friends with some of the guys in the band there, and so they were very nice and gracious. And we went backstage, and we were talking about how this COVID thing was just starting. We were talking about it, and I was asking, Paul Stanley if he thought it was going to affect the tour at all. And then I flew home, and 3 days later, I was COVID positive, and I was sick in bed for five weeks.
Oh no!
And my wife was with me at the show, but she stayed in LA and she didn't get it. So I must've gotten it on the flight going back East or something. I don't know, but I was
just
sick.
Just
sick
the answer. Kiss provides you a safe space here anytime you need it.
Yeah. Seriously. And then what's funny is they, not only was it the last show that I saw, but then they, for the Tribeca Film Festival in New York, their documentary was screened and they played just a 5-song set at Battery Park. They basically just blew up a bunch of shit, but that was like in
while you go see Kiss.
That was like in June of this year. So the last show I had seen was Kiss, and then the first show I saw coming out was Kiss.
That's cool.
But I haven't seen anything else really yet. Everything that I've been trying to see has been canceled. Honestly, like, I've got Avatar on October 6th here.
There you go.
Possibly a couple festivals if they go through. And then I am going to see Dokken at the Whiskey in December, which I'm very excited about. Talk about middle-aged guy. Dokken's my favorite bands of all time, and I never seen them.
I'll be back. So.
David has to go take a dump right now.
Is that one of the shows they're playing with Lynch Mob in tow to where they get the crossover?
That's it.
It
doubles the audience if they bring the Lynch Mob.
Right. Yeah. So you're not a hair metal guy, I'm guessing, David.
I love hair metal. He's the only one. I just can't get I can't get Dokken. I've never understood anyone's love for Dokken. Yeah. I've tried.
Also, since the introduction of this podcast, we've introduced David to such great metal artists as Iron Maiden and Dio. So Chris, don't think that like.
I made my bones on on Celtic Frost and Death, and that's Celtic Frost is my favorite band. I probably bring it up once an episode. It's my favorite band of all time.
I love them.
And I was in Ireland when they were
at BB King's in New York. Imagine them playing BB King's club.
That's those are the kind of pictures I need in my mind. But I was in Ireland visiting some family, and Celtic Frost or Triptychon was in Philadelphia doing their entire mass, and I'm sitting in Donegal going, could I get to Dublin and back to Philly in time and have it make it worth it? There's no way I could do it, but of all times
to leave Philadelphia.
I have a question for you. So first of all, I'm totally with you. As much as of a hair nerd I am, and I am a hair nerd, I love hair metal, but I love Celtic Frost. I love Triptychon. Saw Triptychon here in LA at the Decibel Beer and Metal Fest a couple years ago, and they were fucking unbelievable. But are you a Celtic Frost fan? When you say they're your favorite band of all time, does that include Cold Lake?
I freaking love Cold Lake.
Really?
I
don't even get started.
I think he has kind of like distanced himself.
Orchard.
Yeah.
What the fuck was he thinking?
I don't know. You know what? I don't think I don't think he understands what's good about it. It's their version of the Elder. I think that he did it. And I remember talking to folks who were in that circle at the time, and they were like, he's trying to make a record that sounds like Dokken. And he beat Dokken. I'd rather listen to Cold Lake than Dokken any day of the week. But I love everything they do. I love everything they do. I'm them and Coroner. They're road crew.
Yeah.
I met those guys back in like '88 in a small venue in Delaware. Great band. But let's get back on you. I mean, I wanted to talk a little bit about the chef stuff, right? Like, what's the best stuff to eat in Philly? What's the best stuff to eat? Like in the places where you go and the places where we go. If you were to show up in Philly tomorrow, what would you go eat? Is there like a thing that you're like, next time I get to this town?
I mean, in Philly, you're going to laugh at me because it's probably not good, but it's just what I do.
I eat a lot of bad food in Philly.
His name is Dave, my best friend Dave, and I, the same guy we're talking about earlier that discovered music videos all of a sudden this summer. We kind of a tradition of ours is at least once a year, sometimes twice a year, we find a band that we love and we specifically go to Philly. We take the train from New York City and we get a hotel room for the night and we go to see the show. I think the last time we did it actually was Avatar in 2019. But we have the same routine. We drink at a place, I can't remember the name of it, but it's right there on South Street. And then we go to Jim's for cheesesteaks. Then we go to that other place, I can't remember the name of it, that has the slices of pizza that are like 19.
Oh yeah, Lorenzo's.
Drunk
pizza.
Drunk pizza, because we're drunk at the end of the show.
That's right.
So we do, we day drink, and then we go to Jim's, then we go to the show, then we get Lorenzo's. That's like the deal. This is what we do.
So it's almost probably from Philly.
Might be a disappointing answer, but that's what it is.
No, I'm not a Jim's guy, but I know lots of people like Jim's.
Yeah.
And I could tell you more, really, like I spend most of my time in New York, Vegas, and LA. So I could tell you more about those places. But there's a place in Vegas called La Thai that's off the strip that has got the best Thai food I've ever had. And I've been to Thailand. it's just spectacular. I mean, probably the food in Thailand was better, but it's very close.
Yeah. We've got a Cambodian place like that in Philly. We had some friends come from Cambodia and they said, this is the most authentic Cambodian food we've ever had. And they said, the only problem is we can't get food this high quality in Cambodia. So it's not really authentic.
Right. Yeah. That would actually describe the place I'm talking about.
Yeah. Hey, let's go to Colin. And we know you got to go, Chris. So let's.
I still got a little time.
Okay.
All right. Well, I have two questions that I want to ask.
I do have a call in a little while, but I also said that at first in case this was not going well.
If it's with Paul Stanley, Stanley, just have him join with.
Right. Well,
we'll be Paul so, join the podcast.
Dude, we'll be right so drunk. I don't even know what the rules are for that.
It's nice to know we're winning you over, Chef. That's awesome to hear. Looking at your bands that you have currently, if you could poach a band from another label, if everything was just available, who would you steal?
Orbit Culture. Orbit Culture.
Okay. Where are they currently? What do you know about them?
I think they're on. Their record Nija, NIJA, came out in 2019. They are very, the only way I could describe them is. They're the first band I've heard that you can hear, like, you know, when you can say, okay, you can hear a band's been influenced by Iron Maiden. Iron Maiden's been around forever. Or a band's been influenced by Slayer. Slayer's been around forever. This band, you could hear Gojira influence. And it's the first band I've heard where I think it's really palpable, but they don't sound like Gojira. They really sound like the best of Metallica meets the best of Gojira. The singer's great. He's got a little bit of a Hetfield vibe, but he's also got a very deep, aggressive, throaty, guttural growl when he wants to use it. They're immaculate players. Like the songs are fucking amazing. They're probably my favorite band that's not on my own label. And they crushed it in 2019 with this record called Nija, which you guys all of you have got to listen to tonight. And then they just released a new single, and they're releasing a 5-song EP shortly. I'm going to look right now on what label they're on. I can't remember. Because I looked to see if there was something. And they were.
Well, I'll tell you what. I've got them on right now, and they are brutal. This is great.
They're Swedish.
Yeah, they're Swedish. And
Seek and Strike?
Seek and Strike, yeah. Seek and Strike. It's a smallish label, but they're doing great things for this band.
They're good.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah.
Really good stuff.
Send them a cake or something. Get them to jump ship.
Right? And Avatar have become friends of mine. They're all vegans, and so they love me because I cook them vegan food whenever I'm in the same studio as. But they're a band that I would love to poach and fight. But that's another thing about Metal Blade, which I really respect, is we are not in the business of poaching. You know, we do the best we can with what we got, and if another label's got a great band, God bless.
Well, you mentioned theatrics, and I'll tell you, when you said Avatar, because I've seen them a couple of times, that is theatrics. They are amazing live. It's a spectacle. It is really good. My other question then was, looking at the future of metal music, is it bright? Is it sunny? Is it a great, strong future? Do you have any worries? Because we're going to lose some of the classic metal artists in the next, 5 to 10 years. We've lost a few just within the last 6 months, and it's going to happen. How do you feel about the future of heavy music?
Yeah, it's interesting because who are the next, it's amazing that first of all, even bands that are just finding some success now could be considered middle-aged. So it's definitely what's cool. The good news is it's a genre where you can play for decades and decades and decades and get better. You know, some of these classic bands are making some of their best records ever in their 60s and 70s, which is really incredible. The flip side of that is, who is the next guard? I mean, I think Gojira is a band that will sort of take the mantle at some point. I do think this band Orbit Culture, even though not many people know them, have the potential to be massive. But and I like this kind of, there's definitely been a resurrection of thrash, I think, in the last, you know, 4 or 5 years. Obviously, Power Trip kind of made it even over the, you know, became kind of commercially successful with it. And there's a lot of great thrash bands that are out there. And so I like that resurgence. I think music is cyclical. So I think that metal is gaining in popularity. I think what I love about there's more festivals now in the United States than there ever have been. They're still rather small when you compare them to the European stuff. But there's more of them every year. They get bigger every year. And so I do think, and, you know, if you listen to the people at Revolver Magazine or Gimme Metal, Gimme Radio, you know, metal is like the most listened to music in the world, or number two at worst. So there's a lot to be excited about, but I can't point to a bunch of bands that I would say are still going to be here in 20 years. Right. Metallica will still be here in 20 years, but I don't know. That'd I don't know so if any old. Newer bands will.
Well, you mentioned Thrash Chef. I was listening to War Curse on your label before we started the show. So shout out to those guys. That's some heavy, heavy stuff. I was really impressed.
I've been enjoying going through your catalog. I mean, what a great bunch of bands.
Thank you so much. Yeah. And we got a couple that we haven't announced yet either that are really, really great. So keep your eyes out. If anybody that's listening cares, you can get updates on, I'll just do it now on Instagram. It's Blacklight Media Official. And on Twitter, it's Blacklight Rex, but we don't really use Twitter that much. Really, Instagram is the place, Blacklight Media Official, where you can find updates. And a couple of the bands that I can't talk about because we just haven't gone wide, we haven't announced it yet, are in sort of that thrash, kind of new modern thrash category. And I'm super excited about it.
Yeah, awesome. It's really like the old school Metal Blade days where, you know, you could walk into a record store knowing nothing, but they're on the label.
Yeah. Yeah,
and it's good stuff. It's congratulations on that. I mean, I'd have to agree. You've got a great ear for artists because that's a deep catalog already.
Yeah, and it's cool because you know I get to work with bands that might not traditionally fit on Metal Blade, right? You know, they might not work as a Metal mm-hmm. Blade band, but as a Metal Blade Blacklight Media band, it works. So it kind of gives artists an opportunity to, because when you sign to Blacklight Media, you are signing to Metal Blade. You just have kind of a different. You know, a different, you just get a different logo on your record. That's pretty much it.
Different imprint, right?
So Chris, like as a celebrity chef, and again, like most people would probably know you as that. So like, we wouldn't like do like another pop culture tip question. Like, so best food making movie or movie that features a chef.
I don't know. I guess a lot of food movies to me are not
okay. Bring it.
It's not realistic to me what goes on. But there is
Frankie and Johnny.
I'm gonna say Big Night.
I wasn't expecting like Chocolat or something. Or Big Night.
There's one. I think it's called. Hold on. I think it's called Dinner Rush. Is this the one? Yeah, Dinner Rush. It's kind of an old school gangster movie. It's got a Goodfellas vibe, but it's set in a restaurant, and like the chef's got a gambling problem. But there's a lot of kitchen scenes and food scenes, and it's a great movie. So Dinner Rush.
Bob Giraldi directed that, who also directed the videos for Beat It and Billie Jean.
There you go. Wow, look at you.
Yeah.
There you go.
Danny Aiello. How bad can it be?
And Hit Me With Your Best Shot. Bob
was Danny Aiello.
Big cat back in the day.
Yeah.
So what did you think of that Favreau film, Chef?
I mean, I like the beginning. I like the beginning of it, but I didn't. It got a little too.
Before he had the life change?
Yeah.
Well,
got a little too romantic for me.
No, but I think like the whole thing, like it sort of like it got this sort of like, and again, like I don't know, we're not even going to mention Guy Fieri, but I imagine, again, he's totally cool because he has like the Hard Rock connection too.
Misconception about the first of all, I'm a huge Jon Favreau fan. I just didn't love that movie. The misconception about Guy is everyone wants to pile on that this and that, but Guy has never ever came out and said I'm the greatest chef in the world. Guy has always owned the fact that he won you know, next Food Network star, and that he's a food personality.
Guy's my fucking dude.
Yeah.
Like, oh shit! You like, got like a
I didn't like him when he replaced that? David Lee Roth in Van Halen, and I don't really like him now.
That's good. That's good. But I like Guy, man. Guy's cool. He's misunderstood, I think.
No, he seems.
Oh, no. And again,
I don't think he really gives a shit what people think about him. So,
no, God bless. Plus,
he's a Giants fan. Turn your shit around, Mike.
I'm a Giants fan.
Yeah, I wanted to just bring one thing up.
Of course.
Just because you asked about the movie and the dinner rush and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, Anthony Bourdain, everyone obviously reveres, and there's not, you know, the guy was. You know, larger than life. But what a lot of people don't know is he wrote a book before Kitchen Confidential. He wrote a fictional book called Bone in the Throat. Mm-hmm. And it is also sort of a mafia kind of type situation.
Novel. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a crime novel set in Little Italy in New York. And it is fantastic. So anybody that's an Anthony Bourdain fan out there, read that book. It's really, really fun. I can't believe, especially with his celebrity and the unfortunate tragic ending of his life, I can't believe no one's commissioned it into a movie yet, because it's such a great book. But anyway, that's that.
Cool.
Got to be soon.
Check that out.
Yeah. Give them time. Give them time.
And I checked out Quiet Punch, by the way. What a neat device.
Yeah, it's cool.
I got to order one of those. That's really cool.
Really, really cool. Really, it's like it's lightweight. It's, you know, you put it away wherever you want. It doesn't take up space. Yeah. And in the boxing space, it's rather inexpensive for comparative to other things. But anyway.
And the podcast is Delirious Nomad.
Yeah.
Right?
You can find it obviously the podcasts. Yeah.
Okay. And obviously, we know all about your Food Network history and certainly can find you there.
Yeah, and my restaurant company is called Tau Group, taugrouphospitality.com or taugroup.com. You can find us everywhere. We have between Tau Group and Hakkasan, which is our sister company, we have over 60 restaurants and nightclubs across 5 continents. So you're never far away from a Tau Group restaurant. So come see us.
That is amazing.
So if we want to stalk you, where are you going to be? You just show up in Vegas and be like, Chris told us to stop by.
Yeah, Chris said, come here.
Yeah, I'm typically spend 10 to 14 days a month between Vegas and New York. And then the other 2 weeks I live, you know, my home base is Los Angeles. I just moved here last year after 28 years in New York. And it's great. I love it. I have a backyard and a pool and a big house, and it's fucking beautiful weather every single day.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Well, enough of that.
And I'm five, and I'm a 5-minute ride from the whiskey, so like in the Rainbow Bar and Grill.
Nice,
so.
Wow,
yeah.
Wow!
Thank you so much for listening to another exciting episode of Middle Aged Metalheads. We are grateful to have welcomed celebrity chef Chris Santos to the show. On behalf of John Harden, Michael Stamps, Colin Bosler, and myself, David Timoney, we are the Middle Aged Metalheads. Find us everywhere you get your podcasts, on Instagram, on Twitter, and on the old Facebook box. We're out.